And back from the dead. Howdy, folks. I think this is actually going to be episode 215 of the Paleo Solution Podcast. Episode 214 ideally happened last week with Chris Kresser. We're still trying to figure that out. If not, then maybe this will be episode 214. So that's just the way things are rolling around here. Greg, what's going on?
Man, I have no idea what episode this is. I haven't done one in like 2 years, it feels like.
Yeah, sorry, folks. It's been absolute insanity working on the cert. Greg moved his gym. It's just been a lot. So, yeah, sorry about that. We're back on track. Squatchy and I came up with a kind of a system to make this whole podcast thing a little bit easier to get done. So hopefully we're on task now. Not robots, but just actually having a system to the whole thing. So basically recording
systems.
It one day, one time. If you can make it there, cool. If not, get fucked. So that's the way it's going to roll
that's
out.
Quite the system.
Well, you know, it's funny because there's tons of people I want to interview and do some different stuff. But, you know, trying to coordinate everybody else's schedule with my schedule was just crushing me. So,
yeah, I gave up doing that a long time ago.
Yeah, I finally woke up to that. So anyway, we're back at it. Greg's got his gym moved. What else is new in Catalyst Athletics world?
Oh, man. Everything is always new. Even the old stuff is new.
Perfect.
That's how Catalyst Athletics is.
Nice.
We transcend space-time.
Hence the catalysis piece. So yeah.
Yes, exactly. No, I'm working on a new project right now that should be out pretty soon. The Olympic Weightlifting Multimedia Quick Start Guide. So this is going to be by far the jiggiest kind of resource for those of you who are brand new to weightlifting, really want to learn how to snatch and clean and jerk well, but do it quickly without all the excess information that you don't want. For example, all the stuff in my 450-page book that does not directly teach you how to snatch and clean and jerk from the start.
Right.
So this will be text, photo, video, everything, multiple formats, just very simple, very direct. And so for those of you who just really want that straightforward approach, will be very effective for you.
Nice. Out with the theory,
so look for
in
that
with
here
the
pretty
do.
Soon. Yes.
Cool. Well, let's hammer through our podcast sponsors, Performance Menu, subsidiary of Catalyst Athletics, and the huge, shall I say, juggernaut of Catalyst Athletics, or Performance Menu Journal of Nutrition.
This month is the start of our 10th year of publishing
nice.
That thing.
Nice.
So how's that for staying power? How's that for durability Woo-hoo. And endurance and stamina and whatnot?
Accuracy and precision and all that stuff. Sweet. So Performance Menu Journal of Nutrition Athletic Excellence, $30 gear, get you the basic subscription. But folks, there's nothing basic about this. You get multiple platform formats, amazing information, Cooking with Scotty. How the hell does that guy keep coming up with this stuff? If $100 a year gets you all the back issues and 15% off in the Catalyst Athletic store.
You betcha.
Sweet. Who else? Wellfoodco.com. Wellfoodco is your resource for grass-fed snacks, cookies, almond cookies. Come on, folks, they're cookies, but they're really good cookies. If you want a cookie, have a Wellfood cookie. We have the Wolf Packs, both a keto and a post-workout pack now. Lots of cool stuff going on with Wellfoodco. Check them out. FrontDeskHQ.com. FrontDesk is your mobile-based solution for service-based businesses. Everybody's doing it. Get on it. Check it out. If you're thinking about checking them out, just get a demo scheduled, and then you will be hooked. Anybody else? Did I forget anybody? Caveman Coffee. CavemanCoffee.com is a new podcast sponsor. They are actually CavemanCoffeeCO.com because everybody snapped up all the easy URLs back in the day. If you put in to the little code window there, Rob Wolf, I believe you get a 10% discount on that, and 10% of all sales through the Rob Wolf affiliate deal will go directly to the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Bam.
Nice.
And then also MasaMeats.com. Check those folks out. They are who I get my grass-fed meat and both beef and lamb from. They are outstanding. They service all the Continental 48. Great prices, great folks. MasaMeats.com.
Yeah, a couple of our lifters have ordered from Masa Meats.
Nice.
Big fans.
Cool.
All right. Shall we get on with this show?
Yeah, let's do this shindig.
Whew. Okay. I'm a little rusty. Let's see if I can still read English. Or sometimes what passes as English.
I don't know if NATO is English.
Beth says, hi, Rob. I've loved every one of your podcasts. Thank you.
We've loved them too.
Every single one. I haven't even loved every single one of our podcasts. We love them when they're done. My question is about eating natto for the vitamin K2 content. I did search the site since I couldn't remember if you'd already discussed this and found a comment in the post on Weston A. Price versus Paleo, but no real answer. I have heard great things about eating foods high in K2 along with good fats and protein, but in my research I found that the food with the highest amount of K2 is natto, fermented soybeans. I've always heard to avoid soy. My question for you is whether the fermentation process addresses any of the health issues with soy, assuming it's organic and GMO-free, or would the concerns with consuming soy outweigh the benefits of the high amounts of K2 to be had? Thank you for your thoughts. Oh, here is an article on foods high in K2, and natto is at the top. I know there has been some bad blood between Weston A. Price and Paleo people, but I think both camps have some great information.
Yeah, I'll address that real quickly at the end. But, my deal, again, with this is just kind of taking in this ancestral health model. And if you want to do fermented soy, knock yourself out. I'm not really a big fan of the stuff. If I go to sushi, I will have some miso soup occasionally. But, you know, I just don't make the stuff like a daily food staple. The goitrogenic effects of soy, the estrogenic effects of soy, all that stuff kind of freaks me out. And somehow we motored along for a while without fermented soy as a K2 source. So, you know, your green leafy vegetables, organ meats, all that sort of jive for your full complement of A, D, K, 1, K2, like all that just makes a ton of sense to me. Seems super simple. But again, if you want to do natto, knock yourself out. I'm not really a fan. As to the Weston A. Price Paleo deal, I think Paleo has always been very, very embracing of Weston A. Price. It's kind of been the opposite direction of that we've had a little bit of animosity. I think that most of that stuff's been put to rest. People are understanding that we need a big umbrella, that we're all fighting the same fight. We tend to rally around the ideas of food freedom and particularly supporting people like the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. So most of those shenanigans seem to have gone away. So there you go.
No more shenanigans.
Yeah, at least not in that genre. We'll have to cook something else up later.
I'm sure we can find more shenanigans.
Yeah.
Okay, sucks to your ASMR, or ASMR. Josh says, hey, Rob and Greg, I'm a new listener to the podcast and enjoy it immensely, slowly making my way through the backlog of episodes, so please forgive me if this has been covered before. If it has, we probably don't remember anyway. I've known about paleo for about 3 years and tried to eat this way as closely as possible since. I've found the closer I eat to strict paleo, clean meat, veggies, small amounts of fruit and nuts diet, the more times I experience an ASMR, quote, episode. Also, about the same time as adopting paleo, I probably committed the most un-Australian thing possible and quit drinking alcohol. It wasn't a problem for me. I wasn't an alcoholic or anything, but it definitely was starting to impact my life negatively, and being surrounded by alcoholics at work and in my family, I just decided to stop. My question is, from a biology perspective, do you think the reason for these, quote, episodes occurring again, I remember experiencing this a lot in school, but it definitely stopped for 5 to 6 years, is due to not drinking anymore or more to do with my diet? If you're not familiar with ASMR, I've included this link. I think this article is quite a good representation of ASMR. Side note, these videos around on YouTube haven't triggered me before either. My triggers seem to be actually getting a haircut and listening to certain people talk about a subject they're passionate about. Listening to you guys hasn't triggered me before, but I suspect that it's more due to the fact I mainly listen to the podcast when I'm walking or commuting to work, or maybe it's the lack of passion.
Yeah, we're faking it.
Symptoms of an episode for me is probably the best described as goosebumps on my brain, not on top of my skull, and I go into this deep tunnel vision that I can only reference to a somewhat out-of-body experience. It's an amazing feeling and very enjoyable. These episodes seem to be becoming more frequent, and I find myself able to gain more control of it. Thanks, guys. I won't worry if you think I'm batshit crazy. Hell, I thought I was until I found out this is an actual thing earlier this year. Other people get it.
Oh, man. I just have to
say, I have never heard of this before, like outside of ecstasy.
I had heard about this a little bit in some of my earlier pharmacological explorations, shall we say. And but just as a side note, when Greg and I almost did this podcast maybe like 2.5 weeks ago, in between the natto, this question, and one other one, I almost shut down the podcast because I was just like, fuck, where is this going? But I'm in a little bit less stressed out of a space right now. But so I think the base question here, and for folks that haven't clicked on this link yet, these ASMR episodes are almost like a out-of-body experience meets mild dose of ecstasy plus like, Hallmark, commercial that makes you feel all warm and bubbly inside without the weepy tears. So it's kind of an interesting deal. It reminds me a lot of the book Flow and Finding Flow, like these heightened experiential kind of scenarios. I really suspect, and I mean, it's got to be some interplay between the dopamine serotonin axis. That's what triggers all these types of things. And fundamentally, yeah, I think pulling booze out of the equation is probably a big factor in this. Alcohol ends up impacting all the neurotransmitters, but particularly that serotonin dominant piece of it. And it's interesting, like LSD, mescaline, psilocybin, all those things really hammer the way that serotonin is handled both in the brain and in the gut. So interesting stuff. All I would say is, yeah, probably omitting the booze probably had more to do with it than altering your diet, although if you're healthy and kind of firing on all cylinders, then this is probably part of the reason why you're experiencing these kind of transcendent or peak experiences.
Huh.
Yeah.
So are there health consequences to this thing, or is it just like a really distracting episode?
It's like a tunnel vision plus euphoria. So, I mean,
So like bad during driving or operating other heavy equipment.
Well, the way that they're triggered, that's actually an interesting thing, is the way that they're triggered is usually music, watching someone in a public speaking deal. This is where he was talking about with the podcast. Like, it's usually some sort of emotive experience that can trigger it. A sunset, like they're usually it's a human interaction kind of scenario, though, or like some sort of music or something like that. So, I mean, you're typically not drifting off during driving or whatever. It's kind of a calm, controlled environment, but you get some sort of an intense emotional kind of connectivity to the experience. And I've kind of had this stuff with some music experiences and stuff like that, under non-pharmacological circumstances. So it's
so like, don't listen to opera on your car stereo and stuff.
Well, I don't know that opera would really make you go there, but yeah.
All
something
right.
Like that. Yeah.
Okay. Only because you're an uncultured, heartless pig.
That's true. I did buy tickets to go see Guns N' Roses in Las Vegas, May 21st. So that is true.
For your sake, I wish you the best, but I'm not confident that's going to be anywhere near equivalent to your prior experiences with the actual Guns N' Roses.
None of them that I've seen since their original band have been really all that good, and twice they've been canceled, so
shocker.
We'll see how it goes. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Undercover officer weight loss. Jim says, "Hi, Rob. I'm an undercover officer in a major metropolitan police department. Part of my job involves looking like a drug abuser. I'm wondering if you can recommend a safe paleocentric method to temporarily lose a significant amount of weight. I'm thinking somewhere in the range of 30 to 40 pounds. Think Jared Leto in Dallas Buyers Club. I'm 6'1", currently weigh 190 pounds, and I've eaten a paleo diet for the last 4 years. Knock on wood, I have no major health concerns. My exercise regimen involves mostly cardio and some weight training. I would appreciate any advice you could give me. I followed your books and podcasts in all phases of my career in law enforcement. I owe a great deal to your work. Looking for that cracked out look."
Wow. Actually, this is the one that pushed me over the edge now that I think about it, when we were getting ready to do this podcast before, because I was just scratching my head on this deal. Starvation, staying up all night. I mean, generally just kind of abusing yourself. I mean, if you've spent time around people who are abusing themselves, there's just a look to it that's challenging to replicate without a Hollywood makeup artist kind of background. Like it's got an authenticity to it that's hard to replicate. I mean, literally, it's like starve yourself, go vegan, get vitamin, multiple B deficient, and you'll probably be close to this. Like eating healthy, training well, sleeping well isn't really going to do you much favor in this regard. I guess if we were talking about just like you were going to do some sting operation and you were trying to lose a ton of water, then you could try some of the water cutting protocols that like the MMA fighters do. But then you feel like absolute shit. Your performance is going to suck. Your cognition is going to suck. So it seems like it could potentially be a life endangering scenario when you could be in an arrest and control deal or have like, gunplay going on. So, I don't know, man.
How about just the weight loss alone? I mean, would you want to just like really, really, really reduce calories and kind of focus on more protein than anything else? So you aren't completely murdering yourself, but you're still kind of wasting away in as healthy a manner as possible.
Yeah.
You know, like how can you drop 30 or 40 pounds and not necessarily look like you've been ridden hard and put away wet, but, get that skinny, Oroville spider bite kind of look.
Probably the mainly protein, drink your water, and just feel like shit for 2 weeks would get you there pretty quickly. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Yep.
Let me know how that goes, Jim.
Yes. Good luck to you.
Yeah.
Also, watch that movie Narc. That movie's badass. Oh. Okay. Best course for a morbidly obese 16-year-old. Sambo, I assume, yeah. Says, "Hey, Rob and Greg, you guys are great, awesome, beautiful, etc., etc. Thank you." So here's the deal. At age 23, I've had incredible success with an ancestral diet over the past year and a half after 4 years of yo-yo dieting. I started out at 265. Now I'm 176. Proof in the pudding, right? The reason I'm writing you, though, is because I have a 16-year-old sister who's closer to 300 pounds. She's on a plethora of medications, mostly psych stuff, lithium, antidepressants, Tourette's meds, and she is generally pretty depressed. The good news is she's trying to move in with me on the Big Island of Hawaii to find a new perspective on life. This is her chance to turn things around, and I want to support her as best I can. I have a pretty broad knowledge on paleo protocols and research for a layperson, but there's a lot of info out there, and I would love your opinion as to the best route to take for this young woman. She's 5'11", 16 years old, around 300 pounds, no exercise background, standard American diet, but fewer vegetables, ready for change. My general goal is to start by healing the gut with lots of simple foods, bone broths, meat, some veg, probiotics, some sort, and RS supplementation, if I can get her to drink the stuff, which will increase incrementally as I just listened to Cresser telling you about the possible bacterial backfire with the stuff. On the exercise side, I thought maybe I could start with just walking every day as much as was comfortable, then maybe moving on to modified squats, incline push-ups, resistance band type pull-ups, and maybe a little yoga type stretching. Sleep shouldn't be an issue. It seems to be a priority for her right now, and I've got her meditating, so hopefully stress will come under the reins as well. I guess the real question here is, does that sound reasonable and ideal? Also, would it be better to start off with a more low-carb approach to work on metabolic derangement, or should I start her off more moderately and then work down into it for an easier transition? Goals here are more energy and a happier disposition. I know the weight will come off quickly, so I'm not worried about that. I just don't want to stress her out too much. Thanks for all the great work you guys do. It's a bit of an inspiration and insight that I look forward to every week. Also, I'm pretty sure Rob is going to save the world one day with his sensible paleo approach. So go you. Your bro, Sambo.
Well, we're doing what we can. I don't know that we'll deflect a giant asteroid or anything, but we'll do anything short of that. You know, I think that this, what you have laid out here is great. I wouldn't get hung up too much on what's ideal. Like, what's ideal is just simply what's going to work for her. And I mean, it sounds like there's almost nowhere to go but up with this. Like, if she starts walking, she gets some sun on her skin, she's generally eating better in any type of a direction, I think that that's good. If a lower carb deal could be beneficial, even on like the neurocognitive stuff for a variety of reasons, but that might be too hard for her to do. I don't know. And it could be better, particularly, being in the tropics, like getting her excited about fruits and vegetables and fish and all that type of stuff. So, I mean, without knowing her and talking to her and kind of getting a sense of, you know, what hangups may be going on. Like, it's just impossible to say what the best route through this is. The main deal is make it fun. Don't freak her out. Don't overwhelm her with information. The resistant starch stuff, I think, is I would encourage more like green bananas and, you know, real food versus having her drink some potato starch and water, because even for me, that stuff is, I mean, it's not like nasty, but there's some weird palatability stuff there. And frequently people with depression and different stuff like that, they get some weird palatability things going on. So I would just take it easy, take it one day at a time, one step at a time, don't overwhelm her, and you should be able to get some great progress almost no matter what you do with this.
Cool. Yeah, good luck. All right, this guy's super excited. Legend says, first off, you both should be running this country. It would save us all a lot of grief, and I know you'd outlaw this crazy curriculum our medical doctors are taught and regurgitating. Problem solved. Country saved. Second, you guys are legend. Wait for it. Wait for it. Dairy. And then he goes on to spell legendary for us again. All right, time to get my lips off your guys' ass. Big question. I need your help, dudes. I'm a pro soccer player. I know I'd be considered an elite athlete type, and I should go higher carb, but I just can't skip out on benefits of fatty / nutrient-dense food. I eat a lot of fruit because I want to keep liver glycogen full to keep anabolic and have plenty of energy throughout the day because glucose goes to muscle first. I'm more concerned about keeping my liver full than muscle. I prescribe to everything you say, but eat most of my carbs as fruits. I believe fructose can have its benefits if used at the right times by a person who knows what he's doing. I know you'll probably ignore me after this, but if not, my other question is just for you to expand on the biochemistry of fructose. You say it turns into glucose sponge, so does that mean a 50-50 fructose / glucose piece of fruit would also go to the liver, or excuse me, would all go to the liver, or the glucose would still be used to replace muscle glycogen? Greg hates me, I know. Sorry, brother. Thanks, legends. Thanks, President Wolf and VP Greg. Catch you on the flip side.
Oh, dude, I'm definitely not in charge. Greg's in charge.
I don't want to be in charge.
Man. So it's really hard to just draw these like all or nothing deals. So in general, what fructose does is it kind of primes the pump on the glucose transporters in the liver. And so you tend to get some where if we ate just say like a purely starch-based meal, depending on the insulin sensitivity of the muscle, the fat, and your liver, then we will kind of shunt nutrients based on the relative insulin sensitivities of those tissues. If you've just been working out or exercising, then it'll kind of preferentially go to muscle. If you're insulin resistant at the muscle, it's more likely to go into the adipose tissue. If hepatic liver glycogen is low, then you'll tend to store some glycogen preferentially in the liver. Fructose tends to just kind of skew that, but again, these same stories, this systemic story is there. If we have a high-level, hard-charging athlete, then we're still going to tend to preferentially put carbohydrates into the muscle glycogen. Like that's just the way it's going to go. There's a good argument for repleting liver glycogen for athletic people because part of the thing that blunts a blood sugar crash and the subsequent cortisol response is actually being able to access easy glycogen out of the liver, which will kind of attenuate these blood sugar troughs during exercise, between meals, all that type of stuff. So, you know, there's some arguments there for having at least some liver glycogen topped off. If you're a hard-charging athlete, then that helps mitigate, again, some of the kind of catabolic effects during exercise. Part of the problem here is when we move into a non-athletic, more sedentary population, any type of caloric excess, we tend to gain fat. We have the potential for developing non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Fructose just tends to stack the cards favorably in a unfavorable direction. Like, you know, it just makes that whole process a little bit more pathogenic, deleterious. There's all kinds of, you know, people that will argue against this, but it seems pretty solid that when we have somebody who has solid, legitimate metabolic derangement, that limiting fructose, at least to some degree, is probably a good idea until we reverse non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Sticking more with starches and you know, low fructose load is probably a smart idea. You might even do lower carb during this period of time to really wick all the carbohydrates out of the system and reestablish some good, you know, kind of glucose homeostasis and all that. But Again, there's a continuum here, and it's not just an on-off deal. It's more of a potentiometer than it is just an on-off switch.
Fancy.
Yes.
Okay, well, I suppose it wouldn't be a Paleo Solution podcast without talking about shit at some point.
Exactly.
Alex says, "Hi, Rob. Love the show, and I'm on episode 54 and catching up fast. If this has been answered on a later podcast, please let me know and I'll look it up. Since starting paleo with butter a year ago, my stool has started to float. Is this normal due to the increased amount of fat? If not, what should a normal stool look like? A nice S shape as advertised?"
Jesus. Man. It's probably due to the extra fat. Your bile salt production may not have ramped up quite enough yet. If you want to test this, then you could add in even more fat and see if you find yourself sprinting to the bathroom with a case of steatorrhea. The nice, well-formed, tubular poo is kind of the ideal in this story. Yeah, you don't want things broken up and floating around. I'm totally forgetting the name of the book by Agali, but I think it's a Restoring Your Digestive Health. God, I'm just an idiot because we're actually going to use this book as part of the certification, and I can't for the life of me remember the damn thing, but that book actually goes through like what good poo should look like, and if you just Google around, like, you'll find some outstanding photos of this stuff. So yeah, you're the S curve of turd is probably what you're gunning for, and whether or not they sink or float will be a little bit dependent on the amount of fiber and resistant starch and bacterial activity and all that stuff. And you can have a healthy gut and still kind of a variety of stool appearances.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is possibly why this podcast almost broke me last time. I have to have a talk with Squatchy.
All right.
Yep.
Paleo baking, almond flour, and kids. Three of my least favorite things. Crystal says, "Hi, guys. We have two small kids, ages 1 and 3, whom we have been raising on about a 90% paleo diet. They eat primarily all organic, yams, apples, pears, coconut milk, chicken, and grass-fed beef. We supplement with fish oils and D. Raw vegetables and eggs are, if they're in the mood, foods. So we try to sneak cooked vegetables into yam puree when possible. A staple they have gotten used to, however, that freeze well and sure are nice for on the go, are almond flour-based paleo baking. The kids now have a small muffin or a couple of pancakes per day. I found this article below about the dangers of too much almond flour consumption and that coconut flour is better. Would love to know your thoughts on this and whether we should cut out the almond flour altogether or if this is one of those everything in moderation things. My doctor is also concerned about our kids getting enough calcium being paleo. Any recommendations you may have to optimize kids' health as well as your thoughts on probiotics for kids and any brands you recommend would be great to know too. Thank you for all your time and your constant efforts that keep us informed and healthy. All the best from the Bug family in North Vancouver, British Columbia."
Holy smokes.
She snuck in a few more in the last second there.
Yeah. So I won't be too verbose in answering then. Tree nuts definitely have some high allergenic potential. I think it's smart to kind of rotate that stuff. If these kids are generally eating well, then the likelihood of having gut permeability is lower. So in my opinion, like, the likelihood of developing nut allergies is probably lower, but rotating that stuff around seems great. I think both are good options. As far as like some of the anti-nutrient stuff, I think people go a little too wild on that. What else in here? Thoughts on probiotics for kids. I make homemade sauerkraut for Zoe, and she smashes that stuff. I think that's actually, it seemed like she asked like 18 questions, but now I'm not really seeing. So yeah, rotate the almond and coconut flour. Oh, the calcium deal. I don't even know how to address that at this point. Just Google Rob Wolf and calcium and just set your doctor's hair on fire with that. Somehow, some way, we grew tall and strong before eating dairy all the time without calcium. And if you want to throw some goat yogurt or something in there so that the doctor is happy and gives you a gold star, then that's fine too. But, fruits, vegetables, bone broth, all that jive actually has a decent amount of calcium. And if we're balancing our calcium-magnesium ratio, we tend to do great with that.
Cool.
Yes.
All right. Where the heck are we now? Hyperparathyroidism.
Oh. Whoa.
Crimson says, "Hail Paleo Brothers. Former Superwoman here. I'll sum up my past. I've always had issues with bone pain, migraines, and stomach problems. I went wheat-free about 8 years ago, gluten-free 7 years ago. I wasn't full on paleo at that time, but close. I felt like Superwoman. Nearly all of my issues were gone. Smiley face. I did weight training, yoga, and Pilates. I put on some much-needed weight. I'm 5'4" and was at that time 104 pounds. I am currently usually around 118. So something happened about 6 years ago. Overnight, headaches, stomach problems, weight loss, extreme fatigue, and all manner of hell. And then the kidney stones started. I have had almost nonstop kidney stones for 3 years now. No kidding, these damn things are relentless. I tightened up my diet and started eliminating dairy, nightshades, etc. Nothing helped. I'm still gluten-free. I have a serious gluten issue. And now very low oxalate. The stones are calcium oxalate. This is not stopping the stones. Doctors think that hyperparathyroidism may be the cause of my constant kidney stones. My calcium is in the high normal range. So far, I also know that I have pancreatic insufficiency. I'm working on getting the enzymes necessary to help with that. They're over $1,000 a month.
Crikey.
I'm currently working out 2 days a week with lightweight training and yoga and Pilates mixed in with my routines. So I manage about 2 hours of workout a week. This is what I can manage at the time with a 12-year-old girl and a full-time job and kidney stones. Always the kidney stones. My job is not really high stress or anything. I do body piercings. I love what I do. I sleep well, sometimes too much. I often have to rest in the middle of the day. This is even after a full night's sleep. The fatigue can sometimes be overwhelming. So I'm facing the possibility of having a parathyroid gland or two removed, which is said to make symptoms disappear within a couple of weeks. This is looking very good to me. I would consider ripping them out myself if it would stop the stones. I can find very little in reference to hyperparathyroidism on your site. Are there any specific dietary recommendations you would have for this? I have a few months to maybe get control of this before I let them take the parathyroid glands that are acting up out. What issues might I be looking at if I do let them remove one or two of them? Though I wish I had more witty comments here, I really just want to get to the point. Much love to your podcast and your team. You're all effing wonderful." And then some really creative face that's not really smiling.
It's kind of smiling.
It has like chola eyebrows and then a flat mouth.
Yes. But it's warm and inviting.
It's okay.
For three symbols, it's pretty warm and inviting. You know, the main contraindication with hyperparathyroidism is that you definitely do not want too much vitamin D, which is going to exacerbate that whole story. I don't know if they checked the potential of an autoimmune situation with this, but you know, the fact that you're gluten-free, you've been eating paleo, that all would seem like it would help this, but if they've checked for any type of a autoimmune situation, would be interesting to know if you do have that, although tackling that gets challenging because you want to minimize the amount of vitamin D or keep it within pretty tight boundaries because it's going to make the kidney stones worse, at least potentially. It's a non-complex situation. I did a fair amount of poking around on this, and the hyperparathyroidism is not super common, so like the docs are not oftentimes super well versed in doing it, and it's kind of a complex deal of dealing with the calcium and whatnot. I would look into, is there any possibility that there's an autoimmune component to this? And if there is, then trying to figure out how to do as much of an autoimmune paleo protocol as you could within the boundaries of limiting the vitamin D situation. I wonder if getting vitamin D from the sun would be less problematic than a supplemental vitamin D. Like, you could have better effect with lower doses versus getting it from dietary sources. And then short of that, I mean, the having them removed sounds like it might be the way to go with this.
Maybe you can just pierce them.
I was going to say you could pierce them. But be careful. There's a lot of important stuff in there.
Ah.
Yeah. I mean, your neck and stuff.
Whatever. Okay.
You're pretty avant-garde with that, man.
She's a professional body piercer. Okay. She's got it down.
That's cool.
All right. Last one. Preventing muscle loss while rehabbing a right shoulder labral tear. Jamie says, Robin Gregg, I recently found out I have a posterior tear in my labrum in my right shoulder. I'm scheduled to have it surgically repaired in mid-January. I like how he specifies a couple times that it's the right shoulder. I mean, not that that's wrong or anything. I just think it's funny. Like, perhaps we'd give different advice if it were the left shoulder instead.
Well, you definitely said the rehab, want that clear with the surgeon.
Yes. Bring your own Sharpie and mark it for them.
Right.
My ortho said the rehab period is 4 to 6 months. I was wondering if you have had any experience rehabbing clients / athletes after this type of surgery. I eat paleo 85 to 90% of the time, so I'm not worried about putting on weight. I'm mainly concerned with losing muscle mass due to mandated inactivity. Any suggestions to minimize muscle loss and prevent drastic declines in muscular strength would be greatly welcomed. Thanks for all that you do, making living a healthy life easy and entertaining.
I've worked with a couple of people with this. One guy who's an MMA fighter. You can do all kinds of unilateral work. You can get hip belts so that you can do squats and lunges. Even with being able to hold a dumbbell at the side, probably pretty quickly you'd be able to do that stuff. I think rather quickly you'd be able to do like some prone, like a push-up position type things, getting some straight arm kind of loading. So it's basically do as much as you can with the rest of your body as you would normally do, then with the affected right shoulder, do as much as you can get away with. And you've just got to look at this as kind of a long-term deal. If you don't address the labrum tear effectively, then it's going to nag you and nag you and nag you, and you're never really going to get ahead of it. So get a little less concerned about losing muscle mass in the immediate term. Hopefully you're right-handed, actually, and you'll be able to get the left hand, as strong or stronger than the right one, doing all kinds of unilateral work. And then you can load the lower body just fine doing a variety of unilateral and single leg type stuff. And then just get rehabbed effectively and get back in and hit it. That's what we did with Tyler, and he's done great with this. It was boring for a while and a little bit nerve-wracking, but did a really good rehab on him, and he's crushing it now, and he's up beyond what his PRs were prior to getting injured.
Cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a good point to underscore, is that a lot of people have surgeries or whatever to repair these problems, but then never diagnose the source of the problem and end up just doing it over and over again.
Right.
Don't be that guy. All right.
That's it.
Last words? Last words before we take another 3-month break.
we will be back at it more consistently. I'm trying to set up more interviews because Greg's busy, I'm busy. Sometimes it's hard for us to coordinate. And also, this podcast is maybe illustrative of this, which is in order to keep it somewhat interesting, then these questions become more and more medical, and it almost becomes a steal where it's like, well, go see your family, go see your healthcare provider, which seems like kind of a limp-weenied cop-out. But at the same time, we're not really in a position to offer medical advice. And if basic, paleo template type stuff doesn't address it, then it just doesn't address it. Then we kind of need to go someplace else. So that's been a little bit of a, I don't know if I'd call it a frustration per se, but to breathe some new life into this, Greg and I are going to try to do some interviews and get some other fresh perspectives in here. And then you'll definitely see us powwowing as we put together some decent questions, but going to try to breathe some new life into this thing, to get some different perspectives and not just the same old, damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So anything else, G, anything that folks should know about or be aware of, or
let's see, when does this come out? This comes out this Tuesday.
It'll come out in 2 Tuesdays because we're probably,
two Tuesdays. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Never mind. Then I will not say what I was going to say because it will not exist by then.
Perfect.
Yes.
Even better. Okay.
All right.
All right, man. Thanks for everything. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Okay. See ya. Bye.